Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe, and welcome to the latest Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast on location. I'm here with Alex Jones and Stuart Watson. If you're watching on video, I went to Alex Jones, I looked at Stu, and then I went to... Anyway, as you can hear, my voice is pretty much gone, and we're recording this at what time, Stu?
11:40.
11:40, in our Premier Inn in Middlesbrough. Ipswich Town, of course, lost 2-1. And hopefully you like this, something a bit different. We just got from the ground, we just checked into our hotel, and we're here in the cafe bar where we'll be having our breakfast, which I'll be smashing later, which something's just happened over there. Anyway, boys, my voice is nearly gone, so you're going to carry the podcast. AJ, how are you?
I don't know, Ross, to be perfectly honest. I feel like the last maybe 12 hours of my life have been a bit of a fever dream, especially the last 4 or 5, but...
It's only football, mate.
Yeah, came into things quite happy, a bit of a buzz.
Yep.
Nice to be back at the football, and now it's a bit sad and a bit deflated. But I think all three of us are at the stages where I don't really think we know what's going on. And those are the best podcasts as well, especially off the back of a defeat and a pretty frustrating performance.
Yeah, which we're going to get stuck right into. But before that, we're going to speak about Stuart Watson's guns. If you're watching on video, boom, Stu. How are you, though?
I'm all right, mate. Don't be sad, AJ. I can see over there the continental breakfast that you can get stuck into, probably in just a few hours' time, to be quite honest. I can see the cornflakes, the Cocoa Pops, variety of options. So,
you've just named two cereals.
You're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you? Come on, let's get into it.
Yeah, we're going to get right into it. Also, big shout out to our sponsors, Molecular. No, because my voice, I can't do that. Just come on.
Shout out to our sponsors, Molecular, who do the best car products ever, anywhere. I don't know if I can actually say that, but I think they do, personally. And also to Stardust Spirits. Do the hands, somebody.
Ooh, yeah, if you're watching the video.
So Stardust Spirits, who do, in my opinion, the best spirits. Local companies, both of them. Yeah. We've been able to sample some spirits. Mark has sampled some car products, and he says they're really good. And yeah, we love both of our sponsors. Thank you for sponsoring us.
Yes, thank you. Stu, Town lost 2-1. Overall thoughts, quickly.
This is the stage of the night that people don't normally get to see of us, where we're slightly
frazzled.
I don't quite know the word for it. It's normally me that goes into sort of the silly hour, but I think it's caught on you too.
Squash.
Right.
Oh no.
Ipswich Town have lost 2-1 to Middlesbrough. Their second championship defeat of the season. Struggles on the road continue for Ipswich Town. I'm still kind of getting my head around how I feel about that game, because it was so close to tipping the other way tonight. I didn't think there was a lot between the two sides in general, but as Kieran McKenna said, too many mistakes both ends of the pitch, and it's resulted in a defeat.
Yeah. AJ, international break's done. We were obviously buzzing from the Norwich game, and now we've sort of gone back, you know, to like, oh, God's sake. But, you know, overall thoughts on the 2-1 defeat?
I thought a guy over there was going to attack us. I was a bit worried when he dropped.
I thought this team member was going to come on and say something.
That would have been good. The football. Overall thoughts on the defeat. Yeah, I came into it feeling quite good. I was wary of Ipswich on the road not being brilliant, and there was something that I flagged where I said there's a lot of reasons to be positive, but it's the away performances that we've seen so far that have concerned me the most. I don't think they've played well away from home, really, in any of the games. I'm not totally convinced by them. And this was a continuance of that, unfortunately. There were enough reasons to be positive, because I don't think Borough have been great in their last few games. Statistically, not as good as as the table suggests, but they were the better team. I think they deserved to win, as Kieran McKenna said after the game. And they played well tonight, but they played well and capitalised on Ipswich being pretty poor.
I disagree. I don't think they deserve to win, but that's just me.
What do you think? Was a draw on reflection?
I think a draw would have been a fair result. I think Town, when they got the equaliser, I think they would have deserved to... No, not got the equaliser. When they pulled a goal back for Adara O'Shea, I thought they were obviously the team on top, and I thought they would have warranted an equaliser, but I don't think overall they should... Yeah, I think Borough, they weren't bad. They weren't bad, but we'll get more into that, Stu. Yes. But yeah, an unchanged 11. from the Norwich game. Obviously, we big talking points was Sindre Waliageli and Sami Smodic. They were sort of doubts going into the game, especially Sami Smodic, who was seen with a boot. But they both started.
They did. We wondered whether there'd be a little bit of rotation, like you say, whether, certainly in Sami Smodic's case, whether he'd be wrapped up in cotton wool, given that there's two home games coming on the horizon pretty fast. But he's decided to go with unchanged team. I think that's what a lot of people have been calling for, to start trying to sort of bed in a team, get some chemistry going. Yeah, I don't think anyone had too many complaints about that starting 11. And then the start of this game was pretty frenetic, wasn't it? It was kind of felt like a bit of post-international break energy waiting to sort of come out from both sides. It felt pretty open. There wasn't tons of chances in that first 20, 30 minutes from memory, but it felt like quite an open game. It felt like... my 0-0 score prediction. I was losing confidence in rapidly as the half went on, and AJ talked about a 12-hour fever dream. I would certainly say there was a good 15-minute fever dream at the end of that first half. I mean, smoke coming off the keyboards there with the live updates, because from the George Hurst penalty appeal on 30 minutes onwards, it was like a basketball game, wasn't it? It was crazy end-to-end stuff. I mean, can we try and recap the order of events? I mean, I'll start with that one on half an hour. It's I think it's a Leif Davis cutback, isn't it? And George Hurst hits it first time, and it hits the arm of Alfie Jones, is it?
Yeah.
Down by his side, slightly out to his side, but nothing drastic. But it clearly hits his forearm, forces his arm backwards. I lose track on what the letter of the law is now with handballs in the box with penalties. There was a stage, wasn't it, where it was unnatural position. Then I think they changed it to kind of, if it's a hand, it's a hand, and it's a penalty. So if that is still the law, then by the letter of it, Ipswich should have had a penalty. They didn't get one on half an hour. And then, as I say, from that point onwards, it was just chaos.
It was. And when was the Sami Smodic off the line? Was that...
That followed, I think.
We won't know, because Stu brought the wrong notebook down.
Peek by the curtain.
Here, but this has just got some of my tax notes and stuff like that on it. Just general read house admin shopping lists. So that's going to do us no favours here, is it?
No. But from your mind, AJ, because you know we're only a few hours removed from the game. Normally, we record this on a Monday, and we've had a few hours, days now to sort of recover or not. But this is a few few hours removed. AJ, give me a nice little snuggle. If you're watching on video, you can see AJ being a very nice, you know, younger brother, comforting me and all that. But Sami Smodic needs that goal, and off the line this one.
Yeah, I mean, from Smodic's perspective, I thought that he did well. I don't think I've seen Sami Smodic get on the end of too many headers since signing for Ipswich Town. Or, to be perfectly honest, in his quite long football career, given the fact that he's probably a little bit taller than I am. So I didn't think the headers would be his forte, but he gets on this one really well. He heads it up. It looks like it's going in. It's a really good goal line clearance from Dale Fry. Part of it is a pass from George Hurst that sets it up, and it's kind of what is the alternate universe for George Hurst, where on another day he wins that penalty that we've just spoken about. On another day he gets that cross in for Sami Smodic, and it's headed in, he gets an assist, and on another day, he could have had more.
So I'm just seeing a very nicely dressed man in a tux looking very good, my friend, looking good. Stu, where do you want to go from here? Sorry, I'm just derailing this podcast. I'm easily distracted.
I would say this is borderline unusable at the moment, but we're going to put it out for the people anyway. in amongst that sort of end of first half chaos, Alex Palmer makes four saves in amongst there. I lose track. Some of them very, very good ones.
A few double saves, weren't there? He was still on the floor, and it was like, boom.
Yeah, there was two in the space of a minute. There was a Hayden Hackney one that I think took a low shot that took a bit of a deflection that he had to react really well down low to. One of them probably should have led to a Middlesbrough goal because Strelick puts the rebound chance, gilt-edged chance, over the bar. So Middlesbrough, loads of chances. Ipswich, as we've mentioned, have chances in there. Szmodics off the line. And then we get to 44 minutes and Ipswich do get a penalty.
Oh, is it
a penalty? Is the referee got the earlier one in his mind? It's pretty soft, but I think it probably is.
Yeah, Leif Davis is fouled, but not fouled. I don't really know. It was right in front of me, but he just.
So you should know. You've got the best of all of us.
But it's just like last minute, last ditch defending, weren't it?
It's a cross that gets deflected back straight to him, and because of his momentum, the defender is then the wrong side in the box. At first, you think he's run across his heels. I don't think there is any kind of contact on the heels from the one replay that I've seen. But what he does do is he has a tiny little tug at the shirt, and once the referee is straight down the line of it, and I think he sees the shirt come out a little bit. It's fairly minimal, but it's a penalty.
Yeah, I'm sure if it was the other way around, we'll be like, no penalty, Burrow, no at all. But AJ, big moment in this game. George Hurst steps up. I thought Sammy Smolens was going to step up. He had the ball at one stage. I thought, come on, Sammy, get that first goal. But now it's George Hurst, and oh dear, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to say is I think across the two decisions, at least one of them should have been a penalty. So whether it's balancing out or not, then, it's the football gods doing their work. But unfortunately, the football gods worked against George Hurst. And they have kind of at times this season. I think he's been unfortunate, even though he's kind of maybe not helped himself at times as well. This is a penalty that when you look at it, my first reaction was, it's a poor penalty, should be doing better. And as she says, if he dives the other way, he'll probably say, no, it's a good penalty, he's taken it well, he's given the keeper the eyes and gone the wrong way. So, look, I've seen worse penalties, for sure. I've seen worse penalties scored, missed by Ipswich players.
Sorry, Ali.
that was the worst. But it's just the last thing that he needed, isn't it? He wants to build up some momentum. It feels like every time that he does, he has a game where he's either quite anonymous or he just chases and doesn't work, or ones where just nothing falls for him. So in that sense, he's just struggling to build anything, and that's where you need things to go your way. And this was a night where literally everything went against George Hurst, I think, unfortunately.
I saw Rich Woodward from Blue Monday posted a clip of George Hurst sort of leading up to the penalty, and he definitely sort of looks where he's going to take it. I mean, that could be a double bluff, couldn't it? Sometimes, penalty cases do that, sort of give the keeper the eyes, and then maybe he was trying to double bluff, or maybe he just telegraphed it too much. I don't know. When you reverse them back the other way, do you lose a little bit of power? He didn't hit it that cleanly. Wasn't right in the corner. Was it a reasonable height for the goalkeeper? Not the worst penalty, not the best penalty. As I said to Alex, the goalkeeper dives the other way, you go, sent the goalkeeper the wrong way. It's not a penalty miss, it's a penalty save. But it's a glorious chance for Ipswich to take the lead right on half time, and that would have changed the complexion of this game, because I felt like, for all the talk about Middlesbrough being high flying, and as we sit here now, they're top of the Championship table ahead of the weekend fixtures. They did come into this with one win in five to their name. There was a feeling that their form had just started to tail off a little bit. They'd lost to Portsmouth last time out. And I felt a little bit of edginess in the crowd. A few times they gave the ball away. There was a few groans. And I think if Ipswich had scored there, they could have really turned that home crowd.
Before half time as well. So.
Right on half time, and they didn't. And then they compounded it. I mean, before we move on, George Hurst, he scores the pressure penalty at Birmingham in stoppage time, opening day of the season. But then he's had one. Bromley, was that a save from the spot in the shootout? And he's had another one saved here, which is kind of, people are now revisiting, I think, an interview that Alex did with him, talking about that's my bread and butter.
Sky.
Was that Sky interview?
Said it to me as well.
confidence. Strikers, I think, thrive on confidence. Maybe George Hurst has just taken a little bit of a knock at the moment. He's got how many goals is he on?
Three.
But you know, he could easily have double that. He's spurned some chances, but his overall game just isn't looking at its sharpest at the moment. So there will be a debate now, undoubtedly, going into these next few games as to when is even Azon's chance, I would say. And that's probably a valid one, I'd say, at this juncture. But, yeah, so the penalty saved, and then...
I was going to ask AJ that question.
Go on.
The big question, what he's just, Stu just sort of covered there. Ivan Azon, is it his time to sort of start? He started against Bristol City. Obviously, we've got a three-game week, so, yeah.
I love you staring deadpan into the camera.
I don't know why.
It's gone at this point. Yes, absolutely, 100% he should be starting against Charlton Athletic in midweek. I think that I'd go back to a similar team that played against against Bristol City in that 1-1 draw. I think that Portman Road, we'll come on to Charlton in a bit, but there's an opportunity there to build up some confidence and momentum for some players who maybe need it. I think he's one of them. There'll be some others as well. And yeah, it's a good opportunity for him. And the fact that George Hurst maybe hasn't had the best run of games recently, if he can come into the team in midweek, start that one, put in a good performance, then he'll give Kieran McKenna a decision to make going into West Brom next week. But for me, definitely has to start against Charlton.
And we're going to talk more about the game, but you spoke to Ivan during the international breaks, too. What was that like? And yeah, check that out if you haven't read that already. But yeah, the Spanish striker, how was he?
Very nice young man, very humble, grounded young man. I can tell he comes from good stock, and he puts real value in family values. His parents, his grandparents have encouraged him to have a well-rounded view on life. He's travelled, he's learned different languages, he's studying an industrial engineering degree that he's still hoping to finish this year. Devilishly handsome,
yeah,
as well, annoyingly so, and talks with real enthusiasm about his style of play, the way he likes to ruffle a few feathers and put himself about a bit, and how he feels that's well suited to English football. And we're jumping ahead a little bit. I thought he came on and showed some of those qualities in the second half when he came on. Again, the subs made a difference. But we're jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit there.
It was the time
to talk about him 100%. But yeah, he will start one of these next two games. And I think Alex is right. I think could well be Tuesday night against Charlton.
And a goal is coming for him as well. AJ, Cedric Kipray. I don't want to say hero to villain because, you know, I know he scored an own goal, but you know, he scored an East Anglian derby win, so he's still a hero in our eyes, but he does put the ball in the wrong net to make it 1-0.
Very literally, yes. Hero to villain's harsh, hero to zero probably in this kind of case is the unfortunate way of putting it. Look, it was a pretty tough night for Cedric Kipray from both goals, to be perfectly honest. And this is one where I've seen so many own goals where you turn around and you say it's unfortunate, isn't it? It's unlucky it's hit his arse and gone in, or it's bounced his head, or it's ricocheted awkwardly. This is a poor goal from Cedric Kipray, unfortunately. The ball comes in, there's a bit of static defending, it's across from the right. And as it rolls towards him, I initially thought it got stuck under his feet, but it doesn't. He tries to clear the ball. It's a sliced clearance, and it just bobbles into the back of the net. It didn't look like a ball that he was overly prepared for. And then, yeah, just the way that he goes for it, it's not good watching.
The only slight difference, I mean, first of all, Leif Davis gets muscled off the ball a bit too easily in the build-up to it. The cross goes through Jens Kajusta's legs. Could he have done better to block it? Was that a little bit sort of powder puff attempt to block the ball? The ball goes through his legs. Does that catch Kipray unaware? Possibly, but you know, he looked like he had his eyes down the run of the ball, and he's just, like you say, he's just got himself in a real muddle, hasn't he? Just complete mishit and sliced it into his own net. So it was interesting. I shared some stats about Jacob Greaves that I happened to see on social media a few days ago, and how he comes out really, really highly at the top of the championship pack in terms of headed duels and ball progression. And people have come back and said, well, that's just two metrics. And obviously the eye test tells us that he's made some high-profile errors that have led to goals and penalties, as Jacob Greaves so far. But that told me that his overall game, and that backs up what I've seen with my own eyes, has been pretty solid, actually. And Ipswich in general, I think, have been pretty solid. The goals against have been moments, lapses in concentrations. Tonight, as Kieran McKenna said, was against the grain in terms of how open they were and the number of chances that they conceded. But there was, off the back of that tweet, it was suddenly Jacob Greaves is error prone.
Yeah.
Cedric Kipray is not, because he's had a very solid East Anglian derby, and rightly so. He was showered with praise off the back of that game. But I do remember West Brom fans vividly, and you spoke to many in the summer, that says he can look like a Rolls Royce. He looks really calm on the ball. He's obviously a big man mountain, but he'll have some moments where he'll have a rick in him. You only have to look back, and he's had some odd hand balls that he's conceded in the past, and rash challenges. So I thought it was just a little bit black and white, as I've said all along on this podcast, that suddenly one player good, one player bad. It's not as simple as that. And we've seen that in a microcosm now with Cedric Kipray from Norwich to this own goal, as you say, hero to zero. A bit too black and white, but if you miss the penalty, or you have the penalty save, fine. At least go into the break level. Yeah. That was a killer blow on, 47 minutes?
Yeah, because you're going to half-time. Game plan changes, I'm sure, for Kieran McKenna. Always do this, AJ, this is my standard question. Half-time, how are you feeling
at half-time? A little bit all over the place, because I think we were still catching up where the whistle had gone for half-time, and I was still writing about the George Hurst penalty miss, I think, at that point. And by the time that I'd done everything, including like formatting the photos ahead of the second half, I looked up and the players were back out again, which did sum it up. So I didn't really have that much time to gather my thoughts, but I was probably thinking, typical, you've had all of these things happen, you've had so many chances to score a goal, and you've conceded a really, really stupid, silly one right on the stroke of half time. But I was thinking to myself, I know, say, the Bristol City game where players came on, made a difference, where they got that penalty to equalise. I felt like there was enough in there to come back into that game. So even though I wasn't exactly thinking, yep, Town are going to come back and win this, I thought that there was something they could take from it.
Yeah, but obviously Borough made a 2-0. That first sort of opening 10 minutes through in that second half, I just felt, I don't know, Borough just were really up for it, weren't they?
Yeah, and Ipswich, again, were too open, and that the second goal was hard to pin it on any one individual, but I just thought collectively they weren't tight enough. So it's a low cross that Alex Palmer can maybe do better with, sort of pushes it out into the danger zone, and Morgan Whittaker takes the rebound. But you can always go back a phase or two earlier, and they were played through a little bit too much tonight, and a bit like the Bristol City game, they looked super vulnerable to rapid counter-attacks, whether that was ground passes, whether that was the long straight one through the middle. Defensively, that wasn't great. No. And that is something that needs to be looked at, because as an attacking force, they're not there yet at the moment. No. It's a new team. We've seen signs of when it does click and when the individual talent is on show, it's a dangerous team. Yeah. But as a collective, they're not there yet at the moment. They're not in a position to go and outscore teams 4-3 and 3-2. In the meantime, they've got to tighten up at the back.
They do, and there's been a lot of people in group chats I'm in, they just don't see identity there yet, AJ. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's natural. I mean, while Stu was talking, I was thinking about Middlesbrough, and I think that I see a lot of similarities between Middlesbrough, the way that they play, and maybe some of what I've seen from Ipswich in the Championship, the last Championship season, being quite direct at times, but also just the way that they can play through teams and that kind of cohesive nature, the way they know where everyone is. And I've seen them in a couple of games now. The one that stands out to me was they beat West Brom 2-1, and there's a move where they didn't create too much in that game, but they just played kind of right to left, played through West Brom, Hackney gets the ball in the box, it's a back heel and it's swept in. And that's a team that, yeah, they've added in the summer, but they've kept this core group at Borough over such a long time. Of course, they've changed manager as well, but that's something that I think is helping them. And look, we'll come back to this. We've said this for so long. The identity's not there because it's a totally new group of players. The identity was there in the last Championship season because they played half season under McKenna before, played a full season that got them out of League One, and then they had all of that momentum and the identity that they built and been able to develop from there. It's a totally different situation here. With that, you have to be able to caveat it with two things. Your quality has to be enough, and it should be, with the fact that you've got £20 million players on the pitch, and you have to be able to defend. And they didn't really do that with the second one, I think. I'm not too sure about what the phases were before it, but you look at Kipre's played through with the 1-2, he's left totally out on that side. Leif Davis isn't anywhere to be seen. Dara O'Shea's static in the box as the ball comes in. Palmer, the closest thing he's made to an error tonight. I think it would be harsh, but maybe should be able to hold on to the ball. It's quick play that Ipswich just weren't able to react to, and that's where I see, when I look at Middlesbrough, I think, well, actually, you know what, there are some similarities to that cohesive quick attacking play that Ipswich have. No, they're not outscoring, but when they go forward, I see definite kind of similarities within those patterns.
I'm gonna contradict myself from what I've just said, to be honest, actually, because I say they're not in a position to outscore teams. They could have done tonight, actually, when you think about it. We've mentioned, had a penalty saved, had a Stonewall penalty turned down, which could have been another one. Schmoddick's had that was a Davis cutback to Schmoddick's in the first half that was a really good chance. What else have we had tonight? Then O'Shea scores, of course. There was a spell where, you know, Clark almost set up Azon when they were chasing the equaliser. So there was enough good chances.
Sindre had a chance, didn't he, in the first half where he blasted over, but he had a chance, didn't he?
Yeah, from the half cleared corner. Yeah. So there was enough chances in there, but don't put pressure on yourself where you have to convert three or four of them to be in a position to win a game. And Kieran McKenna said it afterwards, we can't keep going 1-0 down away from home. And probably all of the games, as he says, away from home, Ipswich have had chances to take the lead, not taken them, gone behind, and that changes, especially away from home. It changes the dynamic of the crowd. You know, we saw it at Preston, concede a penalty that gives them something to defend. Blackburn in the abandoned game, obviously that was a strange game, but similar situation. Birmingham, well, what else are we missing?
That's it, isn't it? The league away game.
So
Bromley, they fell behind as well. I mean, I know it's a different group of players, but it's those same kind of patterns. And there does come a point as well, Bristol City, of course, is the other one, where no matter which players it is, it's something that Ipswich have to address, where take aside everything that you do on the pitch, you can't let it become a mentality issue. You can't let it become a thing where there's a mental block that you have to overcome, where they'll go into a game where they'll be big favourites and they'll fall 1-0 down against a goal that comes off someone's arse in the corner, and they have that mental block to overcome it, because the longer it goes on, the more it is likely to become a psychological issue, and it's something that they will need to address sooner rather than later, because we have seen things that I think have been psychological issues for Ipswich in the past. Look at last year in the Premier League. I know how hard it is in the Premier League, but things like the home record and being able to do those things, like, after a while, sometimes I think there's a mental block there, and there is an aspect that Ipswich need to be able to get that out of the way as soon as possible.
Yeah. And Stu, I lost train of thought there for a second. They didn't drop their heads though, did they, Town? I felt they weren't beaten at that stage, because some teams, when they're 2-0 down away from home as well, and you've had the moments in the game, you think, oh, they'll just drop their heads and that'll be done. But of course, they got back into the game with Dara O'Shea, and at that point, I thought, as I said earlier in the chat, I felt they were worthy of maybe getting an equaliser, because they were pushing, and the subs made a difference once again.
They did, yeah, and it's a set piece that leads to it. The set pieces weren't that great over the course of the night, were they?
We need to address that. I'm sorry, Leif. Those set pieces, they need...
One corner in my mind sticks in my mind, where it just sort of went over everyone and out for a goal kick. There was first half, Philogene took a deep free kick quite early on and didn't really beat the first man to get it into the box.
Davis off the wall, that was a really good opportunity, I think, quite early in the second half, where Philogene and Davis were over it. Good opportunity, and Davis just smacks it into the wall.
Yeah, So they weren't great, but they do get the goal back from a set piece, and Nunez is one of the subs who comes on and makes a difference. Lovely header from O'Shea, isn't it? Beyond the near post, glances it in. And from there, all of that tension that I talked about, we felt in the first half could brew. I could feel it then. It just went very quiet in the Riverside, and we were thinking there's still plenty of time here with stoppage time for Ipswich Town to get back into this. And I don't know how long that period lasted where they really pushed for it, maybe 10 minutes. The best chance in there was Jack Clark again, who injected some energy off the bench, almost picking out Azon. And then it kind of petered out a little bit, I would say.
Yeah, it did. And I want to say one thing. I may be giving away some secrets here. Sorry, Dar O'Shea and the set-piece team. But every time we get a corner, you see Dar O'Shea doing like a Chinese whispers, like, yeah, over here, you know. So, yeah, and obviously he did that with Nunez, and then they connected and got the goal. But, yeah, it's good that we got us another set-piece goal. But, yeah, AJ, 2-1. Town trying to push for that equaliser. I just couldn't find it, could they?
No, and Barrow defended well to their credit. They packed the box.
Barrow?
Did I say Barrow? I meant to say Barrow. Okay. Fine.
I don't know.
It's been a long old day, folks. Yeah. Barrow defended well to their credit. I think that, yeah, they packed the box, and when Ipswich kind of found themselves with the ball on the edge of the area, there's so many times they shot and it was blocked, or they kind of were able to kill off that threat. They're not a high margin football team. You look at the games they've had, it's 1-1s, it's 0-0s. They don't score two that often, I don't think. So they're in a position where, as well, when they score at home, they don't drop leads. Every time they've scored at home, they've gone on to win the game. God almighty. They've gone on to win the game when they've scored first. So look, they're a resilient side. They know how to defend leads. Got there. And that made it quite hard, so credit to them. Could the subs have been made earlier? I don't know. So they came on 67. I felt that, I mean, if it was me, I probably would have rolled the dice quite soon after going 2-0 down, to be honest. You said, I hope he doesn't hold until 70 minutes, do it now. It was close to 70 minutes. Would you have made those substitutions earlier? Because they did change the flow of the game for quite an extended spell. Nunez really good, Jack Clark really good.
Yeah, I think so. That is definitely something that people have spoken about with Kieran McKenna for quite some time, that he maybe delays a little bit longer than he should do with changes. To me, it was clear, like you say, once it went to 2-0, that it needed something to kind of change the flow, change the narrative of the game. Chuba Akpom booed onto the pitch, which surprised me a little bit.
It was a mixture. There's a few boos, but there was a few claps. Maybe where you were sitting, there could be boos, but I know there was a few cheers where I was, you know, sitting.
Yeah. So, mate, yeah, I would have said probably 5-10 minutes earlier. And then there's another argument. It's always like for like with Kieran McKenna. Doesn't, you know, for this game, Middlesbrough have changed their shape to probably is a bit of a compliment to Ipswich. And Kieran McKenna's talked about that, how teams are going to change when they face Ipswich. But we know with Ipswich, it's always 4-2-3-1, and it's always like for like for changes off the bench. Does there need to be a slightly different approach, or does plan A, does plan B need to, you know, in Kieran McKenna's mind, is just doing plan A better? Again, it's up for debate. I don't know what that would look like in terms of alternative. Normally people just shout about extra strikers, which I think is a bit too simplistic for me. But maybe going slightly more direct at times is certainly something to think about. Don't know. What are your thoughts?
That is straight away what I thought. Put another striker on. Just put all the strikers on. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, that can backfire. What are your thoughts, AJ?
I personally probably wouldn't, to be honest. When you look at the other options, I don't think... I'm going back to Mike Bassett, football manager. with the 4-4-2, I'm not going to say that line here because you'd have to bleep it and say I'll be wrong.
No. It's fine because it's, you know, after dark right now.
No, I'm not doing that.
Professional.
Yeah, professional.
What kids watching this?
Oh, no, yeah. What are the other options? You can go to a back three and give your wing backs more attacking drive. I don't think that suits having Darnell Furlong in the team, to be perfectly honest. For me, I what, you play a flat midfield three. None of them are really going to solve the issues that Ipswich have at the moment, I don't think. The main thing is, yeah, you need to have a plan B, but you also need to do plan A better, I think it is. This is the strongest point. We've spoken about the subs. You nudged me there a minute ago. I don't know if that... Do you want me to set up my quiz question?
Yes, we've got a quiz. A very short one.
Yeah,
but AJ, quiz master.
Oh, yeah, I am the king of stats. AKA, I go on my little app, my football app, and I just look through the numbers that look interesting. We spoke about Chuba Akpom there. Yep. Booed onto the pitch. You got applause afterwards as well. You got a nice reception from the fans at the end. Didn't have a busy game coming off the pitch. He played 27 minutes in that match. How many touches did Chuba Akpom have? Play along at home. How many did he have?
Oh, okay. No offence here, Chuba, but, you know, it's just it's what it is. I know there's obviously Borough fans sort of chanting, you know, shouldn't have left, should have stayed at the Borough and all that. But they're always going to do that. But Stu, all right, mate, me and you battling out. So 27 minutes.
I'm assuming it's low, otherwise you wouldn't have brought this up.
50 touches.
Well, given Ipswich are kind of chasing an equaliser and having plenty of the ball and Borough are kind of packed in at that stage.
Kind of summing up the
should be having more than obviously a low number that you're going to tell me about. Five?
Oh. I'm trying to think of pictures now in my head, the snappy snaps I took. I can't remember him being on the ball in any of my pictures. So I may go lower, which is... I'm going to go two.
You've gone too high. You've gone too low.
Oh.
But you were closer. It was three.
Oh.
Three touches across 27 minutes on the
pitch. What's my prize?
You can have some cereal from the bar over there.
Lovely.
There's no milk, so you have to use some ketchup or some HP to go with it. Yeah, that kind of summed the night up a little bit. And I think that kind of... Yeah, well, for Chuba and for Ipswich. And it's kind of summed up Chuba's start at Ipswich as well. They need to get him into games more. Yeah. I don't like when I see him dropping essentially into midfield, I've seen a lot of the time. Look, he's a 10, but he's a 10 that spent so much of his career at striker. There's got to be a way to get him.
But at Borough, he actually did play a lot in midfield, or he dropped to midfield, and that's how he scored his goals prior. But
he's not playing like super deep in those situations. Yeah, yeah. He's running into the box. He was playing off Cameron Archer. He was playing a lot of the time as kind of a second striker, and that's what he wants to do. And Ipswich just don't seem to have a way to get him into the game, which is a real shame, to be honest, because there's a talented player there and there's a physical presence there, which maybe they're lacking a little bit in the final third. He's a big old boy. Yeah. From when I stood next to him, I was like, oh, wow. they need to do more for him, and they need to figure out how to get him into games.
Yeah.
Some interesting tactical stuff tonight. We're talking about always the same and no plan B, etc. But Kieran McKenna did speak pre-match about coming up with this different game plan and how Middlesbrough's midfield, albeit without Aidan Morris for this one because he's fresh from being away with America. Hayden Hackney, of course, big town target in the summer, needed the supply line to them needed to be stopped, and they needed to come up with a game plan for that. And they did try some different things in there. The inverted fullback experiment with Leif Davis, who by his own admittance says he's still getting to grips with that and he feels a little bit lost when he comes inside at times, but feels he's getting there. They kind of tried to do that a fair bit. There was one point where Leif Davis was virtually central striker at one stage in the game in a sort of a spell of open play, but his best work still comes on the overlap and producing those trademark cutbacks. So I don't know if they'll keep persisting with that. And Sami Schmodic's role as the 10 was really interesting in this game. That was definitely something, a bespoke game plan for this, that he virtually played as a right winger. He pulled right. I mean, it's not alien to Ipswich. If you remember Connor Chaplin, Wes Burns' partnership, Connor Chaplin played as a right-sided 10 who pulled naturally out to that right side. But this was Schmodic's playing virtually on the touchline at times. And him and Volarigelli playing almost right on top of each other, and there was a lot of conversation between those two. Sindre couldn't get into this game at all, could he? I mean, we liked what we'd seen from the Portsmouth and the Norwich games, but you know, we're talking about lack of touches and not getting into the game. He certainly couldn't get into this one, could he?
No, he couldn't, which is a shame. Did you also see Borough's tactics? Did you see Whittaker? When we had corners, he was so wide. And I was like, whoa. And obviously, I dragged Town players out wide as well. And I've never seen that before. I don't know if you guys, you know, did you spot that?
No.
Oh. Did you?
No.
There was good observations.
Was definitely moments where Whittaker was so out wide, so I dragged Town players out wide. That's just my observation.
It was quite an interesting tactical battle tonight. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of things that we don't spot and appreciate, but it did feel like, although it was a really open game, I mean, if you tuned in as a neutral on Friday night, you'd have really enjoyed that, wouldn't you? I think for the rest of us, it was
frenzy.
Yeah, it was a bit too exciting. I think what did Kieran say afterwards? A bit too.
You spoke to him.
Bit too. I can't remember now. Bit too open or bit too.
Yeah.
Bit too eventful, I think was the phrase for my liking, for his liking. But yeah, I mean, Ipswich were fun to watch in the championship last time around. In many ways, they're still quite fun to watch back in this division. I've just got to fine tune. There's still some real fine tuning to do at both ends of the pitch.
Yes, yeah, only second defeat of the season, ladies and gentlemen, in the league. Obviously, both been away from home. But yeah, any other business from the game, boys, as we wrap up this on location KOA podcast?
Like the Riverside. Mm-hmm. Don't like the location of the press box at the Riverside because it can allow the away fans to antagonise you directly a little bit, grab your laptop or scream in your face, which, I mean, yeah, it's fine. You get used to it. Well, I feel like, have you had some taste of it like League One? Was that a bit more of a thing?
I can't remember. Yeah, that has happened at certain grounds before.
Norwich, yeah.
Yeah. It was fun and games. That took a little bit of discipline to stay seated, but...
Stu was going to get those big guns out.
Yeah. Any other business? Azor Matasiwa is now suspended. He has picked up 5 bookings this season, one of them in a ghost game against Blackburn. That does still count, which means he will be suspended for Tuesday night against Charlton, which we should probably finish by discussing.
Did Kieran confirm that post-match? I know he got asked about it post-match.
Yeah, it's been shown up on Sky. I spoke to someone at the club on the way up, and they did confirm to me that Blackburn one counts. So
yeah, if Graves has been suspended, surely...
Yeah, you know. I didn't know if it was reds and yellows were treated differently, but yes, it counts, and he will be suspended.
Everything about that is odd. Yeah. Your goal's gone, your result's gone, but your cards stand, and your red cards stand, and then your red card doesn't count for the next time that you play Blackburn, but it does count for when you play who knows.
And it leaves Ipswich without a like-for-like replacement because he is really the only kind of holding midfielder out of some, you know, a good collection of midfielders, but no one's going to play it like Azor Matasiwa. It's a home game against Charlton. I don't want to do them any kind of disservice because they've taken the step up to the championship pretty well so far. But that balance of the midfield is going to look very different. How do you think it's going to look? Is it going to be Kyusta and Nunez, do we think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, I think so as well. Yeah. This is an interesting game to not have Matasiwa for because you look at it on paper and say it's probably a good thing. You'd rather not have him for this one than the West Brom game, for example, or maybe QPR down the line because Charlton aren't going to be as strong a side. They come up from League One. I think style of play is going to make this one quite interesting. This is a Nathan Jones team. They are defensive, they are resilient, they are horrible to play against, they're gritty, they'll be direct, they're going to sit deep and soak up pressure, but they also can play when they get forward, and the way they do that is by having a back three, by having three in midfield, by having the wing backs bomb forward, and then they've got two strikers that kind of work off each other really, really well, and it's a balance that has suited them well in League One and will suit them well and has suited them well in the Championship, and they've got good results. They won at Bramall Lane recently. You're right.
You gave me, I did an out loud thoughtful noise, a little a ponder, because I haven't done much research on Charlton so far, but everything Alex has just described sounds to me like that's some of Ipswich's Achilles heels in there.
So Nathan Jones football, based on what we've seen so far, take Preston for this, the one that stands out to me, where they were horrible to play against, and they were direct, and they played, I think it was again a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-2-1. There's going to be a lot of similarities in that, and Charlton obviously come up with different players that played in League One. They've recruited quite shrewdly, like League One level players as well that made the step up, are Harvey Nibbs. I've signed a midfielder from Blackburn, I can't remember his name. Rob Apter's come up as well. So they've got players that are stepping up to the level, but they're doing so in a team and a setup that is really hard to play against. They're not going to score loads of goals. They're not going to be open and attacking. It's not Nathan Jones' way. But do you remember his Luton team? A lot of similarities to that.
And there will be an element of the fan base that go, newly promoted side, yeah. Portman Road, we've cracked easy. Portman Road now. Yeah, and so there's expectations going into this game, and that puts a bit of pressure on Ipswich Town. I wouldn't rule out Jack Taylor for midfield, you know, when you talk about wanting a bit of edge and physicality. He came on and was put himself about a little bit, didn't he, when he came on in the latter stages of this. Jens Kajuster, is he ready to go? It's Friday, Tuesday, so he gets an extra day of recovery, but how, I don't know, only the medical team will know how far they want to push him.
He was poor tonight, I think, as well. That was a frustration where the midfield didn't work. I didn't think that Matasiwa was anywhere near his best, and Kajusta, when he doesn't have the smooth silkiness on the ball, if he doesn't have the kind of the grit and determination at times that can counteract that, and sometimes being laid back can be exposed by teams, and I think that's what Borough did. So yeah, it leaves him with a bit of a dilemma going into this one. I can't quite figure out what the right balance would be without Azor Matasiwa, because if you're looking at an Ipswich midfield, it would be Azor Matasiwa plus ? Mm-hmm. Take him out of the equation, it becomes so much harder when you're looking at Taylor and Nunez. For me, in my head, I can't quite work it out. Playing Kajusa again after a poor display and asking him to go again with the issues he's had makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And this was in the summer when I'm one of the big things I was saying on deadline day is I think they're done, but I'm really worried about them not having natural cover for Matasiwa.
Cameron Humphreys, please stand up.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, you say that, but look, at the end of the day,
he's here tonight. He was doing the runs on the pitch and all that. So. Yeah.
He won't leap from Jack Taylor in the pecking order.
No, but there should hopefully be, there might be an opportunity for us to at least see him for,
on the bench,
for 20 minutes potentially in that game. I think all roads lead to a January loan for Cameron Humphreys, but I'd like to still see some more of him because he's a good football player.
Yeah, very good. And also, they've got a former Town player on the Cheltenham team, Stu. James Bree, remember him?
Yeah.
He's done pretty well. I think he was nominated for Player of the Month.
Yeah,
in September.
Last seen at Portman Road getting sent off in a 3-2. I don't know if he was last seen, I can't remember, but I remember him getting sent off in that 3-2 defeat.
I actually think he played for Southampton when we played him this season already. Then he's gone on loan to Cheltenham from Southampton. Yeah. But he's done well, so just, I don't know. My ex-Blues fetish.
Anyone else? Gaston Adme's gone now.
He's a Stevenage, so yeah. But there's nobody else I can think of. Okay. Right, boys. That's it. I hope you've enjoyed this, ladies and gentlemen, this On Location Kings of Anglia podcast. It's felt weird that we're not in our spare bedrooms. So I'm like, I can actually touch Stu right now. I can touch AJ.
Please don't.
And I've been able to just hear your brains work in motion. And
My highlight was if you, at the start of this, when we were also fairly chaotic, much like the end of that first half, I can say it now. A fairly intimidating guy with his hood up came in, and he dropped a massive, about a litre-sized drink, and it just went everywhere. We've had this kind of the night porter kind of sweeping around in the background, people coming in from nights out. Yeah. So I think we managed to keep our composure just about.
I think so. And you mentioned as well, there's obviously it's Halloween soon, so they've got Halloween decorations, and you've got the normal, you know,
bats
and vampires, pumpkins and stuff, but in like basically kids can potentially, you know,
small children's height,
yeah, that's the word.
What they've gone for is pretend meat cleavers with with blood on them. Not particularly family friendly, but there you go.
Yeah, here you go, kids. Sleep well and all that, yeah. But no, boys, thank you so much for joining me. Hope everyone's enjoyed listening to this. We're going to hopefully do this as much as we can when we can on away games. Final bit of business is we're going to go to bed. I'm just going to quickly check this has been recording. I think it has. So hopefully you've had a podcast to listen to.
It's half past midnight.
It is half past midnight. And we are going to go to sleep. Sponsors, you mentioned the one I can't say properly.
Molecular.
KOA 10 to check them out. Another one.
Stardust Spirits.
Yes, KOA to get 20% off your next order. Thanks again for listening to Kings of Anglia, Ipswich Town Podcast. See you next time. Bye-bye for now. Good night.